Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography, a crash course of music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And that was very precisely said. today, we are, it's funny, it feels like we just got off of a heavy metal thing. Well, we did because of the Ozzy Osbourne thing. Into kind of a little bit more, I don't know, is it right to say more serious heavy metal than Ozzy? Because I feel like this is more serious heavy metal than Ozzy.
I would say that, but I think this is a really weird dovetail from The Clash.
Yeah.
A lot of punk influence with these guys, too.
I think so. And that is probably one of the saving graces for me for this week. Well, I won't say that. I mean, I definitely enjoyed it more than I thought I would. Well, let's get into it. Let's just talk about it.
And based on what you've said, though, that's like saying that you enjoyed the endoscopy more than the colonoscopy.
Yeah, that's far better. I like the tube coming out more than the tube coming in. The band we're talking about is Anthrax. And this is a band that prior to this show, I think it's pretty easy for me to say that I think I just knew them more from covers over anything else.
And based on your playlist, you still do.
Exactly. Well, I know them for more things, but I still like them for the covers. we'll talk about that. Let's start talking about that. Here is their history and discography. Anthrax is a metal band formed in 1981 by Scott Ian and Dan Lilker. It's considered one of the big four thrash metal bands. We talked about this before, along with Metallica, Slayer, and Megadeth. They are the only one of those four bands from the East Coast. I didn't know that. Very interesting. The name was picked by Scott from a biology textbook because it sounded sufficiently. Okay. that's not how you spell sufficiently. I'm just gonna say it right now. Sufficiently evil.
So on a different note, I want to throw this out now. Scott has written two books, at least two books. They're both on Audible. He reads them. And it's really the only way to experience these books because he does impressions of people. Like, he does an impression of Dimebag Darrell. He does an impression of Sebastian Bach. He does impressions of all these people. And he tells these stories in his own words. And it really is the only way to experience these books. And I highly recommend getting both of them because they're highly entertaining. And the stories he tells, some of them are truly heart-wrenching. And others of them are just flat out funny.
Really? Oh, yeah. That sounds interesting.
Yeah. And he's a big nerd. He loves like horror movies and sci-fi. He's a huge comic book guy.
Oh, that's cool.
All the things that make me feel like he'd want to hang out with us, you know? Well, yeah. You want to hang out with him. Let's
be clear on who's going to be lowering themselves to hang out with the other.
But he sounds like he totally fit in at like Team Las Vegas or something.
Oh, that's cool. I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah, I mean, Anthrax is it's cow disease, right? It's the powder that you
And that actually comes into play later on, but yeah.
Okay. All right, we'll talk about it more later. Scott pulled a lineup together and they recorded a demo in 1982. As the band started to play out, they were sharing the bill with up and coming band called, I don't know, Metallica. Maybe you've heard of them. At least if you've listened to the show, you've heard them mentioned in the last minute. Before the first album was recorded, there were some more lineup changes.
Yeah, the band has gone through a number of lineup changes. Scott and Frank are really the only two that appear on every album. But they've kind of got a revolving door. Some people come back, some people leave in. There's always been kind of a fluctuation, but the guitar sound has always remained Scott, and he's a primary songwriter. So there's that through line that kind of is cohesive through the entire history of the band.
Makes sense. Yeah. And you kind of hear that, boy, do you hear that change, that lineup change pretty dramatically as they go further and further. A second demo was recorded and they gained attention of the new label, Megaforce Records, who had just released Metallica's Kill 'Em All.
The history of Anthrax is really, really tied into Metallica's history. The foreword of one of the books that Scott wrote, it was done by Kirk Hammett. And like when they first got to New York to record Kill 'Em All, They gave him a refrigerator. They let him borrow gear. They opened for him. They did a lot of things together. And they've been there for some of the more meaningful moments of Metallica's career. Hmm. And they're friends and they hang out. And it's they're very much tied together.
You kind of expect that sort of dharma, or not dharma, expect that karma. What is that? The synergy or the the non-competitiveness, which I think is really cool. Really cool to see in a situation like this. That's awesome. In late 1983, they recorded a single that contained Soldiers of Metal and Howling Furies as the B-side.
Or furries, if you look at my typing.
Is it for furries? You know, I can actually see Howling Furries very, very easily. They released an EP called Armed and Dangerous. It contained two live tracks and two songs from the earlier single. In 1984, they released Fistful of Metal. Oh boy, is it. Contains a cover of I'm 18, originally done by Alice Cooper.
This is legendarily one of the worst album covers in metal history.
I cannot argue with that. It is so cheesily drawn. I mean, it looks like it should be on the back of somebody's peachy folder that they did in Woodshop.
Look at the hands. They're both like left hands. So it doesn't make any sense.
I didn't even notice that. Oh, geez. So apparently they're a right-handed artist who could only draw left hands because that's the hand that they could hold up.
Yeah. And I guess in the first printing, the Anthrax, which was supposed to be deep red, came out pink. So that's not very metal to have a pink album title. So,
oh yeah, no, definitely want the deep red. I do like how the tongue is coming out sideways on the side of the face. That's a cool thing. And the chin and the teeth even below, like it almost, so basically we're supposed to believe that the hand is going through the face.
It's punching through the head, out the mouth.
Okay. So at first I thought because of the couple of the blood trails, I thought it was a swing, but no, you're right. It's coming through and the hand is remarkably clean.
Yeah.
And devoid of any blood, mm-hmm. having just gone through an entire face.
Mm-hmm. But again, one of the worst album covers ever.
We could pick this thing apart for hours. So I guess we shouldn't. All right. Enough of that. The album was hit with mixed reviews, mostly hitting on the fact that they still hadn't found their footing.
And it's not hard to understand because so many people were coming in and out at this point. They really hadn't locked down a lineup. They hadn't even really locked down a sound.
Yeah, and I could see that. I mean, it was kind of all over the place. For me, just vocally, it was a difficult album to get through. After the release of this first album, Lilker left to form the band Nuclear Assault. Frank Bello replaced him, and then Matt Fallon was replaced by Joey Belladonna.
Yeah, Belladonna, I'm not going to disparage his voice because he really was one of the main voices and contributing factors to Anthrax's success. Mm-hmm. But for me, his vocal tenor, his mm-hmm. vocal style is not my cup of tea.
Yeah. No, it's a little too generic for me.
Call it shrill.
Yeah, it is a little shrill. Yeah, it's and I think that really took away from it for me. Like, I think had it not been for the vocals, I might have enjoyed the arrangements and the music and that stuff a little bit more. But the vocals really took it out for me. 1985, they released the album Spreading the Disease. The lineup contained Joey Belladonna and Frank Bello, the aforementioned, and Madhouse was released as a single.
So with the time left over they had in the studio, Scott Ian got together with some friends of his, and they recorded, they've made the band Speak English or Die, they formed the band Stormtroopers of Death and recorded the album Speak English or Die, which turned into this semi-phenomenon back in 85. I remember all the cool kids had it, and it was a kind of a limited release, and it was very much more punk-edged and very much more... kind of raw and kind of aggressive. And it was kind of done as a lark, but turned out to be a thing.
Interesting. I'd never heard of this before. I mean, I may have seen the album cover. It looked really familiar, but, it wasn't until we got into later albums that stuff started feeling a little bit familiar to me.
Yeah.
So I guess I was just kind of out of that genre. The album was received with widespread acclaim.
A shocking blast of noise from a long-haired bunch of punks that know their own business, praising a deceptively chaotic songcraft, was one of a quote from one of the reviews.
That's cool. One of the legs of the tour for the album had them playing alongside, again, Metallica. The last show of their run was in Sweden, and the next day, Cliff Burton was killed in a bus accident.
Yikes. And that chapter in one of those books is pretty heart-wrenching because
I'm sure
they've known each other for, you know, since the beginning. Yeah. And they were there when the news broke. They, you know, they were riding bus kind of convoy, and it's an amazing chapter to read because it puts you right there in the center of the loss of one of their best friends.
Wow. Mm. Yeah, I can imagine. And the firsthand account of that and stuff has got to be really rough. The song Air stands for Adolescence in Red, a play on Rhapsody in Blue. In 1987, they released Among the Living. This is considered by many to be their breakthrough album.
And this album was actually dedicated to Cliff Burton.
That's a good thing to do. I am the law, as you can tell, is a tribute to Judge Dredd. I guess this is Judge Dredd, 2049, not necessarily Judge Dredd Sylvester Stallone, which was my horrible impersonation right there. Indians was the other single released.
Yeah.
Classics Caught in a Mosh, Efil Nukesson, or NFL. I see what it is. Nice effing life spelled backwards. I was wondering about that. I thought it was I thought it was German because it seems like it's German. That song is about John Belushi's death and addiction, and Skeleton in the Closet is based on the novella Apt Pupil,
which was turned into that creepy movie with Magneto.
That's right. Ian McKellen. Yeah.
Among the Living is based on The Stand.
I like that they do this sort of thing. There's a later song called Monster in the End, and I really want to believe that it's based on the Sesame Street Grover book. There's a monster at the end of this book.
You know what? It really could be. I mean,
it could be like they're almost that tongue in cheek.
Yeah. Scott's got kids. And so I totally could believe it.
If not, let's start that rumor right now.
Okay, yeah.
All right. I'm the Man was a rap metal hybrid that was done as something funny for them, but is considered one of their hits.
And as you'll see later, I don't care.
In 1988, they released State of Euphoria. This album reached number 30 on the album charts. Who Cares Wins and Antisocial had videos that were released as singles. Money's all that you desire. Why don't you back it and be done? Antisocial is a cover of the band Trust from France.
Yeah. Antisocial is just this side of a punk song for me. I mean, it's, yeah. And my favorite is Driving Mrs. Satan. The people
yes.
who did, they did a cover of Antisocial, which is really,
oh, really?
They turned to this kind of light pop, female pop hit.
Oh, that's awesome. Totally awesome. Who cares? Let's see. Misery Loves Company and Now It's Dark are based on movies. Oh, really? Which ones?
I don't know what two movies it's based on, but Misery is Misery. Misery Loves Company is Misery.
Oh, based on Misery. Okay.
Yeah. And Now It's Dark, I don't know. But Now It's Dark was translated into Schlimmish. Simlish.
Simlish. I know. It's as gibberishy as the language that it describes.
Yeah. It's like Elvish, except, you know, geekier.
Right. Make Me Laugh was a critique of Tammy Faye and Jim Baker. Oh, yeah, that whole thing. And Mort Drucker from Mad Magazine did the back album art.
Yeah.
The in 1989, they released an EP of Anikafusin, which contained a collection of covers and a couple of originals. I bet some of those things ended up as bonus tracks on some of these later albums in the iTunes list. In 1990, they released Persistence of Time, a much more serious album. It surpassed the success of the previous albums.
And many people call this a much more progressive album. And I don't mean that like Dream Theater progressive. I mean it like they were just growing as musicians progressive.
Yeah. You could start hearing that. Even the song Got the Time was a success for them. And it was a cover of a Joe Jackson tune. And this is pretty much at the point that I'm starting to like, well, this was the first song, I'll be honest. This was the first song that I made it all the way through. but don't take that to mean that I listen the first few seconds and then skip. I usually listen through the first verse and chorus, or at least until I feel like I know the song well enough that I could, you know, predict what's happening or sing along with the next chorus.
Even
I'm the Man. Yeah.
See, I thought that just makes me laugh every time I hear it.
that didn't catch me. Like when you mentioned that it was a rap metal hybrid, I'm like, I almost need to go back and listen to that one because I don't remember it specifically. But this was the first one that I was like, okay, all right, this is good. And I've played that on Coverville before. And so I'm
familiar with a lot of Coverville. You like Anthrax by way of Joe Jackson.
I like Anthrax by way of their covers. And at this point, they'd had a couple other covers on albums. And I'm a firm believer, well, in my opinion, and it's absolutely my opinion, they were much better with other people's material than they were with their own. Like their work with other people's material, Got the Time is a great example of this, where they knew exactly how to rough that song up, you know, rock the edges to make it stand out as an Anthrax song. Mm-hmm. And I feel like some of their stuff before that just felt a little too repetitive, samey, and kind of like we've painted the stripes on our lanes and we're not going to veer outside of those stripes. Now, there are going to be diehards out there who disagree with me, and that's totally, absolutely fine. And
yeah, bring it, Joey Image.
Right. He'll be one of them. And that's totally fun, especially Joey Image. Hey, dude, whatever you like it, that's cool. It just just wasn't for me. As far as the stuff I connected with, it was what they did with other people's material that I did more. And that's no surprise to anybody, me being the cover dude.
Yeah.
In 1991, they recorded with Public Enemy on a version of Bring the Noise. This was a hit for both groups and led to a tour.
So the story of how this was made is also told in one of the books. And it's not just that they went and recorded with them. It's much more complicated and a lot more work. And the fact that it worked at all is a testament to their talent. Public Enemy number one. What you ought to do is follow for now. How are the people say? Make a miracle. Deep. I'm the lyrical. Black is
That's cool. I didn't see this on any album, and it's a bummer because I would have liked to have checked it out for sure.
I'm sure you can, if you look up a Public Enemy, you can.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, but you'd think that this would be included as one of the bonus tracks on.
It was one
of the albums
on Killer Bees. Read the next line.
Well, okay, that one wasn't. That one wasn't in Apple iTunes. Later that year, they released Attack of the Killer Bees. It contained three tracks from, I'm still not going to read that, especially not going to read it with a P at the beginning. Annika Fusen, and a new version of I'm the Man and a version of Bring the Noise with Ian doing some of the vocals. Yeah, I don't know why Killer Bees wasn't part of that that Apple iTunes list. I bet you provided it, didn't you? And I missed it. Oh, well, sorry, Anthrax. I still enjoyed my playlist, so I don't think anything would change that. In 1992, Joey Belladonna was fired and John Bush was brought in. In 1993, they released the album Sound of White Noise. The singles released from this album were Only, Room for One More, Black Lodge, and High Pro Glow.
So James Hetfield of the Metallicas...
James and the Metallicas, yeah.
He called Only a perfect song. And no spoiler, but I agree with him, and it's on my playlist.
That's cool. That's, again, amazing praise. For sure. And I'm wondering if Black Lodge is, because this would have been around the time of Twin Peaks, and I'm wondering if Black Lodge was inspired by that. Because
I think it was
obviously shown. Yeah. The lyrics seem to work well with a Twin Peaks frame of mind, so I believe it. Vocals were a big change from prior albums. Cannot argue with that at all. That was a point at which I started liking it a lot more. I don't know why, but the vocal style with the musical arrangement felt a lot more supportive.
Yeah,
as opposed to anti. Yeah, exactly.
So John Bush actually a really, really good metal voice.
He does.
The quality of his voice matches the music more than Belladonna's does.
And I'd even say he's got not just a good metal voice, but even a good grunge voice. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. There are times it was like, oh man, this could be with a little bit of tweaking, this would easily be an Alice in Chains song.
Uh-huh.
You know, yeah. It's really, really good. This album, by the way, Sound of White Noise, reached number 7 on the album charts.
And it was called Melodic and Pummeling.
Cool. And it begins with the Sound of White Noise. It's, you know, you get what you pay for. Like, it actually begins with the Sound of White Noise. I found that very entertaining.
Quite literal.
Yes, this is true. In 1995, they released, is it Stomp? I think it's Stomp 442. Stomp
442.
Yeah.
Once Stomp again, 442. My failed me.
Stomp 442. Come back. Fueled and Nothing were released as singles. This album debuted at number 47 on the album charts.
Elektra did not promote this album at all. It does not feature the Anthrax logo at all on there anywhere.
Yeah.
And it didn't do all that well because of it.
How crazy is that? I mean, this is this feels like logos are a big thing with metal bands. Like, mm-hmm. they develop a logo and they stick to it. Meanwhile, you look at Green Day or Weezer. Well, Weezer is not a good example because they do use that same W all the way through. But just looking at recent bands, The Clash has different logos on every album, and 21 Pilots and De La Soul. I'm just thinking, like, it's much more like a brand commitment that fans seem to make when in metal mm-hmm. with a logo than as much with other genres.
And it gives you something to draw in math class when you get bored.
That's on your peachy cover right there, right above your version of the fist through the face album cover. Chock full of metal. Chock full of fist. Face full of teeth.
Two left hands and a thing of wire.
Right, exactly. Tongue on the right. The album actually didn't review well. Stomp 442. Although for me, this is actually where I started really enjoying their music. They were beginning to sound a little bit more grungy album after album. I liked Sound of White Noise, but it still felt like, all right, new vocalist, same repetitiveness. Then Stomp 442 felt like, all right, new vocalist. And now we're getting into stuff that gives me some audio interest. In 1998, Volume 8, The Threat is Real, came out. Really enjoyed this one, actually. This one reached 118 on the Billboard charts. The singles were Crush, Inside Out, Piss and Vinegar, and Born Again Idiot. Pieces was a hidden track by Frank Bello as a tribute to his brother who was murdered, and the album also had mixed reviews.
Yeah, this one, my favorite review of this one, it says it was aggressive to the point of exhaustion.
Wow. That's a review. It's like a shit sandwich for Spinal Tap. In 1999, they released a greatest hits album called Return of the Killer A's. It's a little play on the Return of the Killer Bees for their B-sides. It contained a cover of Ball of Confusion, which was originally done by The Temptations, also brilliantly covered by Love and Rockets. Mm-hmm. And there's this lot closer, obviously, to Love and Rockets in the style of heaviness to it.
So amid the potential PR nightmare, Anthrax issued a press release in October of 2001, joking that the band's name would be changed to something more friendly like a basket full of puppies. And Anthrax dispelled any name change rumors derived from the press release at the November 2001 9/11 benefit concert when they took the stage in boiler suits. With a different word on each one of their suits that ultimately read, "We're not changing our name."
Oh, that's Bello funny.
Bello has stated that they did so after receiving support from members of the New York Police Department and the New York Fire Department, believing that changing the name of the band would send the wrong message. A picture of the band in the suits is on the inner tray of "We've Come For You All." So with all the terrorist stuff and Anthrax getting mailed around, they're like, nope, we are sticking with us because we've been around longer than they have.
And it makes sense. And you can see both sides of the argument too, right? Like, you know, Anthrax for a while there, when people were getting mailed Anthrax after the terrorist attacks, had such a negative connotation. Just the name, you know, is like, oh God, that's some scary stuff. But the fact that they kind of stuck by their guns and said, no, we're keeping the name, you know, it's a name that we've had. It's brand commitment. Mm-hmm. I totally appreciate and respect that.
Also, being a New York band, I mean, they are fully born and bred a New York band.
Sure.
The fact that they have the support of the city, the fire department, the New York Police Department, they got fans there. They know some of those guys probably. And so it was probably one of those things where they're doing it for the city too. They're going to be New York strong.
Yeah. Yep, exactly. The terrorists tried to take this name. We're taking it back. That kind of thing. No, it's very, very cool. And I respect that a lot. 2003, We've Come For You All. This is the, we talked about the band in their suits you could see in this album. This was the last album with John Bush, and it was recorded at Bear Track Studio.
Where I first heard about Bear Tracks when Dream Theater was recording Images and Words, and I think Metropolis 2 there.
Oh, cool. Take a drink, everybody. Take a drink. Taking the Music Back was the single. Roger Daltrey of The Who and Dimebag Darrell made appearances on this album. It met with very good reviews and was called a return to form. In 2005, they got the classic lineup back together. They toured and played Among the Living, the album, in its entirety.
After some worries about who would be the vocalist, they were thinking that Dan Nelson would take over, but it was still, you know, Joey Belladonna was able to step in and get back together with him.
Do we know Dan Nelson from anything else?
I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Okay. Well, in 2011, they released Worship Music, and like we said, although Dan had been touring with them, Anthrax joined back up with Belladonna as vocalists. And I got to say, the time was good to him. The time was good to his voice, or maybe he picked something up that Bush was laying down, because it felt like a different sound than those first few albums, for sure.
What I'd really like to hear is an album that had both of them on there and tried to do harmonies, or try to, you know, mix it up where there's more vocal interest, because
would be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Huh. Worship Music received good reviews. Fight Till You Can't was the first single from the album. Which also reached number 12 on the Billboard charts, the album did. 2013 saw the release of Anthems. This was an EP and is the only Anthrax album Brian has ever bought. It contained covers of 70s favorites, although it wasn't reviewed well, and it got dinged for being too careful.
Yeah, they cover Rush, AC/DC, Boston, so on and so forth.
Yeah, they do their second Thin Lizzy cover on there, and second Cheap Trick cover on there too. They're big. I'd say Cheap Trick and Thin Lizzy are both big influences for them. Yeah. In 2016, they released the album For All Kings. This one actually had album art by former Marvel comic artist Alex Ross, one of my favorites. Evil Twin, Breathing Lightning, and Monster at the End, the aforementioned Monster at the End, which was influenced by the Sesame Street Grover book, Monster at the End of this book. Those were all released as singles.
One of the songs that was written called Sora Iramutar.
Oh, good. You know, you get to deal with it yourself. Yeah. Good. It's only fair.
Irumator. It's the title of a song that Anthrax wrote. It was on the Catch the Thrones mixtape volume 2. And it also featured Mushroom Heads Among the Crows.
Oh, cool. Which was influenced by Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're just going to make up things that influence other things and just make them fact from now on. And that's it. That takes us to the end of the history and biographies. Hammond, tell us some statistics and general notes about Anthrax.
They are reported to have sold 2.5 million records in the United States between 1991 and 2004, and worldwide at 10 million. They've been nominated for 6 Grammy. They've won 3 Metal Hammer Awards. They're highly respected. They do lots of joint projects with other bands and have, you know, kind of made a mark on music.
I can definitely say, and they are absolutely, they're well deserving of that kind of top four, big four status. Especially the more I listened to them, the more I absolutely appreciated them. So very cool. All right. Well, let's talk. Have you ever seen them in concert?
No, I have not. I would like to.
Yeah. That'd be cool. And boy, can you imagine being at the concert where Metallica opens up for Anthrax? God, how cool would that be?
They did a Big Four tour a couple years ago, mm-hmm. where it was Slayer, Megadeth, Anthrax, and Metallica all touring together. And there's a DVD release of it somewhere, but I didn't get it. And I figured if I, you know, I have enough of their stuff anyway, but they've done that kind of stuff. That would be a legendary to see.
That'd be cool. Well, let's say you do go see them in concert. What song do you think is guaranteed that they're going to do as part of that show? This is a tough one for me to say, because I have no idea. I don't know what their big singles were. You probably know better than I. And what do you say?
Okay, so my thinking is Caught in a Mosh, Antisocial, Indians, I Am the Law. And I'm kind of leaning toward either I Am the Law or Caught in a Mosh.
Okay. Caught in a Mosh is number one. Bit. Really, the top two are by quite a bit from three and lower, but Caught in a Mosh and Antisocial, the Trust cover, are number one and two. Indians got the time, so actually that Joe Jackson cover, one of their most played songs in concert. Madhouse, I Am the Law, Fight 'Em Till You Can't. Efilmkufisin, or NFL, is number eight. Among the Living and Medusa rounding out the top 10.
I bet you Medusa is based on Clash of the Titans.
It's based on the Inhumans TV show from ABC. That Bring the Noise, by the way, 15th most frequent cover that they or song that they play in concert.
My favorite reference to Bring the Noise is from the movie Airheads.
Oh, yeah. Remind me of the reference. I love that movie, but remind me of the name.
Adam Sandler is talking to the lone African-American DJ, and he's trying to buddy up to him. Uh-huh. And he goes, "No, I really appreciate what Anthrax did with Public Enemy, but, you know." I'm just like, oh, my gosh. It was just such an awkward conversation to have, and he played it off perfectly.
That's cool. And that feels like a fairly realistic thing that you'd say to try and bridge the two worlds. Too funny. All right. Well, we talked about some of their covers, and they've done quite a few, but who would we like to hear them cover? I'm going to go ahead and start. So they do that classic rock thing a lot. Like a lot of the stuff on Anthems is your classic rock, like your Rush, Cheap Trick, the aforementioned Thin Lizzy a couple times. And since they're comfortable in that area, I want to kind of keep them where they're strongest, and I would have them do Sweet Emotion by Aerosmith, because I think that they might want to play it safe for the slower bit, but then when kind of the drums kick in, they can really just rough it up and bring in the really distorted guitars and really rock it out. I think it'd be awesome. Yeah,
that's a good one. Yeah. I'm going further back than that.
Okay.
I'm going back to Crossroads by Robert Johnson.
It's a good choice.
And I'd love to hear them just break down in a heavy, aggressive, good old-fashioned blues jam.
Yeah, and that's a great one to choose, too, because it is blues. Obviously, blues and classic rock are so well connected that it'd still be something that they'd be able to handle. But they, again, a lot more material there to kind of rough up than some of the newer rock songs.
And the subject matter is sufficiently evil.
It is. Or suffucantly or whatever.
See, now that we've made the callback, I can't cut it out.
You can't cut it now. No, you've got to keep that in there. I've locked it in now. Otherwise, that's a reference that no one would get. All right, let's go ahead and get into our playlists, and this is going to be funny. I think it's going to be no surprise to anyone what my playlist largely consists of, but let's get right into it. First one is the Got the Time cover, the cover of Joe Jackson.
Tomorrow, all we want to drink up. Got the time to
And it's a good one because it's not one of the bigger Joe Jackson songs, right? I mean, Is She Really Going Out With Him, Stepping Out, Different for Girls, I'm the Man, not to be confused with the I'm the Man that they do, but all really, really big hits for Joe Jackson. This one was kind of a deeper cut, and it fit in perfectly with their sound. And like they knew exactly where to place that Anthrax template and apply the paint so that when they lifted it off, it was it was as much an Anthrax song as it was a Joe Jackson song. So kudos to them on that one. And that was, again, like I said, the first song that I listened to all the way through. Second one was Auf Wiedersehen. This is from the album Sound of White Noise, which I'm surprised I liked. Well, it's not surprised I liked these two songs, these next two, because they are the covers that were included, I guess, as bonus tracks. But here's what was really cool. I got into this song, listened to it, and it was about 30 seconds before I recognized it as the Cheap Trick song. And what's cool is Cheap Trick does some great stuff with chord progression, taking it in different directions, almost taking it like a typical set of chord progression that you hear, and then they change it for the last chord and you're thrown, and it's like really, really cool. And so hearing Anthrax do that took me out of that sameness that I'd been wrestling with for the previous albums to this one. So it's really good. They're, I say, in those early albums, they are excellent with other people's material for sure. Right after that one came the Cowboy song, also from that same album. And it's a similar situation. It wasn't until after the first minute or so that I recognized what this was. And it's a cover of Thin Lizzy's Cowboy song, which I just really, really like. And I'd forgotten about how much I liked that song, and hearing them put a fresh coat of paint on it was really, really cool. I'm Alive from the Worship album from Worship Music. Is my fourth choice, and it's a non-cover. It was a surprise. That it was the first one that I really liked.
Like the other one, right? Of these songs are doing their own thing.
It's exactly the case with this one. Yeah, this whole album, Worship Songs, really leapt forward by leaps and bounds for me from previous stuff. And the fact that it was Belladonna coming back and doing vocals surprised the heck out of me. That, all right, I'd written him off and said, oh, thank God he's no longer with Anthrax. But when he came back, it was welcoming to hear how much he'd evolved as a singer for this one. And the last one, I thought was kind of a deep cut Queen cover. I guess not, but it's from a tribute album called Classic Rock 28. And it's a cover of Queen's It's Late. And this is another one that comes in kind of slow and then jams out about halfway through and is really, really good.
So I actually have this on an album called Dragon Attack, a Queen tribute.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And it's got a whole bunch of different bands kind of getting mixed up and thrown together to do covers. So it's got like James LaBrie from Dream Theater doing One Vision and Sheer Heart Attack. And then John Petrucci's doing the guitar on another one, Bites the Dust.
Oh, cool.
And it's available on Amazon for like $4.
Yeah, I wonder if I've got that. Some of these, you find those albums, and they've been called about five different things because they feel like people are going to just keep buying it every time they see it. Because I'm usually one of those people that keeps buying these every time they see it, and then I realize, oh, I've already got these songs. It was just on an album that was called something else. But yeah,
that's great. The Dragon Attack's a great album, though. So if people don't own it, get it.
Yeah, for sure. Tell me your playlist, Hammond.
All right. So I started off with Be All End All from State of Euphoria. This is really my favorite song of theirs. It's got a really cool build up with the cello that starts out the song, and then they move it into the guitar, and it's got such a great build up, and they really use dynamics really well with it. And it's one of the first songs of theirs in like the listening when I was growing up that I was like, yep, this is my favorite Anthrax song.
Cool.
But as far as my favorite thing Anthrax has ever done, it's number two, which is I'm the Man.
No!
Yo, man, what's the matter with you?
I'll get it the next time. I mean,
Charlie, beat the beats you beat.
The only thing hard is the smell of
this. This is a revelation of how funny these guys are.
I feel like I need to go back and listen to it after we're done here. Yeah, give it another chance.
This is a fantastic song. It is rap at its silliest. It is them at their most self-effacing, and it takes all the things that turned into nu metal and does it way, way, way before nu metal does it. Number three is Only from White Noise. Someone, as in James Hetfield from the Metallicats.
Love it.
He called this the perfect song, and I have to agree with him because it's a great piece of music, and the way it builds and the way they structured the music itself shows a lot of maturity and shows a lot of understanding of who they are as musicians and what they can and should be doing as musicians. Then I picked In the End from Worship Music, and this is a song that they wrote that's dedicated to Dio and Dimebag Darrell because they both were inspirations for the band, and they both passed away, and they wanted to kind of memorialize their influence to them in song.
They do that a lot, you know, influences by books and movies and then tributes. We've seen a lot more of it with them than we have with other artists, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they wear their inspirations very much on their sleeves, mm-hmm. and their heroes are right out there in the open. Scott Ian makes no qualms about the fact that Kiss is the reason he plays guitar. And then the last song I picked is Any Place But Here from We've Come For You All. And I picked it because it's just a really, really solid metal song. It's a great rock, kind of hard rock metal song, and it kind of epitomizes what they've grown up to become.
It's cool. It is cool watching their evolution as a band, and For All Kings. I gotta say, kind of enjoyed it. Oh yeah, and there was a Carry On Wayward Son cover on there too that I really liked, but not as much as some of the other covers that they've done. So good job. You've kind of turned me around on Anthrax. At least you've made me more aware that there are albums that Anthrax has released that weren't called anthems. So so very good. There's something there. Excellent. Well, that is going to do it for this episode. If you want to get in touch with us, please do. You can email us at soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can write us on Twitter. You can message us on the tweets using @thesoundography. Soundography.com is our website. Go there. You'll find all of our previous episodes, 85 of them, 86 of them. Where you can go listen to them willy-nilly, whatever you want. You can see our playlists, the Spotify stuff, as well as find links to buy the albums that we recommend by these artists. And you'll also find a link to our Patreon. We love getting your support. It is what keeps the Soundography lights on. So please consider throwing a buck or two our way every month. Every little bit helps. And if everybody listening to us were to do that, we would... it would make such a difference in our lives and in our ability to kind of excise a few other projects, if you know what we mean. Well, except not the things that we do that you really like, just the stuff that we do that we don't like. <How's that? laughs> Also, please leave us reviews of the things that you do like, your favorite podcast client, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spreaker, Stromper, and Flinker. Those other two might be pending.
Podcast Alley.
Oh, Podcast Alley. Yes, vote for us on Podcast Alley. One of our favorites right there. We'll be back next week with another episode. We'll be talking about the band, the Avett Brothers. I think that's how it's pronounced. And that's one of the first things that we need to learn and confirm is that it's Avett Brothers.
Yeah. Here's the thing with them is I've already started listening.
Yeah.
Getting my mind to shift gears
from Anthrax, yeah,
took time.
I'm sure it would. It would have to. It totally would have to. Can't wait to start listening to the Avett Brothers. That is going to do it for us. We'll see you next week. And on behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, we'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.